Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Ramblers, and welcome to a little revisit of our series At The Match, which we made to bring you the atmosphere from some of the UK and Europe's most interesting grounds and games, which for obvious reasons, while we're mostly indoors, I've been really enjoying re-listening to of late and resampling the roar of the crowd. Now, this is At The Match all over for you. From LA to Sunderland, we like to be diverse, if nothing else. This was a good one because Sunderland had been through a tough old time, relegated to League One. Come on, don't tell me you haven't watched a Netflix series. But there was a real hope I got when I spoke to our friends from the Blizzard, David Rose, Pete Dakin, and of course, Jonathan Wilson. That feeling of getting your club back really moved me, actually, and also accentuated the fact that maybe following a club isn't just about promotion and relegation, whatever the financial imperatives. This is At The Match from Sunderland versus Southend United on 27th of October, 2018.
My goodness, it is freezing. This is definitely not Southern California.
So, you've been in League One a couple of months now.
Yep.
How is it? Is it strangely liberating? Is it still a little bit depressing? Have you come to terms with it?
Definitely come to terms with it, and it's far from depressing. I mean, winning matches is, you know, is the key to everything, but behind the scenes, we've got the new ownership who are massively engaging with the supporters as well. And the sort of second stage of that, as they initially sort of come into the club, has been bonding with the players as well, which is, I think, has been massive. There's a real connection between the players and the fans. It's reciprocated, I think.
It's funny, what I expected today is I guess something a little bit more sulky. Like, if my team had been relegated 2 seasons in a row, I would expect, like, you know, a bit of...
Yeah,
I think difficult to come into terms with it.
I think we've been under the cosh as a club and as a team and as a supporter base for so long, with sort of just scraping safety in the Premier League,
yeah.
Dull football, and then the season in the Championship where it just all came to crashing together, really, where we the owner just disappeared. The football was awful. The attitude of the players was horrendous. And there was a mixture of sort of apathy, anger. And in the last second half of the season, fans were just... If we conceded a goal, fans were just shrugging their shoulders. And it just felt like it wasn't our club anymore. It was awful. There wasn't even that much anger towards the end. It was that bad. And the fans were staying away. So I think it got so bad that... And because there was a real threat, really, of administration, if Short decided to, pull out altogether. So the fact that it seemed to turn around so quickly with the new owners and the way they've approached it by embracing the fanzines and the podcasts before they've been to the local press, they've really welcomed in the fans. They have actually consulted with supporters in pubs. I mean, how many thousands of conversations Charlie Methven must have had with supporters in the lead up to them just buying the club to understand the DNA of Sunderland fans, really. And then to get the club to reflect that. And I think that's started to seep in, and it's and the support have really sort of like bought into that.
So do you think that would have happened if, say, we were still in the Championship or the Premier League and a substantially better backed consortium had done it? Or do you just think it's something that they realise they need to do because of the level of their at and because of the means they have?
Yeah, I think there's in terms of the new owners, I think they realise that we're not going to be generating the broadcast revenue that we once were, so they need the support now, so there's like a business case for it as well. I think fans are wise to that, but regardless of that sort of end goal, the journey of actually reconnecting and listening and getting input from the support into things like the match day experience, topped off with, of course, a winning team, because all of that means sod all if we're not doing it on the pitch. So it's just come together nicely, and I think we're probably as a squad a little bit ahead of where we thought we would be. Let's not forget that they had to gut the squad that was, get rid of a lot of mercenaries, bring a lot of individuals together. But I think the one trait that all the new signings have shown is a real hunger and desire to play for the club.
Yeah, well, I guess that's it. When you look at Sunderland in this division, and we've had it before with, I suppose, like Manchester City and Leeds in the last 20 years, is that you saw it with Sunderland today, Southend today, sorry. It's big for everyone to play here. It does sound a bit patronising, say it's their cup final and all that sort of stuff, but it is a massive thing, when you talk to fans of other clubs to come here and to play in front of that crowd. I mean, as a Wimbledon fan, I feel that we have a succession of seasons where, like, every season you have one or two teams and you go, my God, I can't believe we're playing these in a league game. We had that before with Luton when we were in the conference, with York, I suppose, when we were in the conference, with Portsmouth, and now with Sunderland. Whereas I guess you're getting that in reverse, right?
Yeah, it's a bit... I mean, well, actually, being the eighth most successful club in the country, we're quite used to being the big boys, really. Like, but no, it is a strange feeling. And actually, I talk to fans and who sort of have to check themselves a little bit and not be like the sort of Billy Big Bollocks in the league and try to be a little bit more humble about it. It's difficult, though, when you're starting to stuff teams as well. So you want to give it a little bit.
When we were in the combined counties league, arrogant of the younger supporters. It was just disgusting.
Yeah. I did hear My Garden Shed at one away game, which was a bit depressing, but the whole My Garden Shed chant. But yeah, no, it is a strange position to be in, and it takes a little bit of fathoming out, but I think that in the main the supporters are pretty inward looking at the moment and just enjoying the fact that it feels like we've got our club back.
But it can be an incredible start to something as well, can't it, really? Because League One or the third tier or whatever you want to call it, because it's incredible to think, like, what's it, 98-99 that Manchester City were in this division. If you look back at some of the fixtures they played, their local derby was Macclesfield. They lost to York that season. And then look at them now. I mean, I'm not suggesting that Sunderland are going to win the Premier League in the next 20 years. But it could be a springboard to something, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess it was last summer in the third flight in 87-8 that we then, we end up in the first division slightly fortuitously, given Swindon's legal payments. We went up in 1990.
Fortuitous, don't even worry about it. It's all Gillingham City, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, at least they did actually win the game, which we didn't. But, you know, we beat Newcastle. That's the important thing in the semi-final. Never forget that. It can be a springboard, but I'm not even sure people are that bothered about it being a springboard at the minute.
It's just nice to win.
There's almost a relief in a kind of a sense of, actually, you know what, the Premier League, it's great to watch. It's actually great to be part of if you're there for 10 years and never winning games. I mean, I saw a stat that towards the end of last season, we won our 100th game in the previous in a decade, and over that 10-year period, the next lowest number of games won by any league club was 136. So we'd won 36 games fewer than any other of the 92 teams in that decade. That's miserable.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite good fun when you do daft things like beating Chelsea and Everton to stay up. Or when you go to Stamford Bridge and win 2-1 to kind of and then beat United at Old Trafford to stay up. But to get in that position where that becomes worthwhile is really grim. And I'm saying this as somebody who's utterly dilettantish about supporting someone. You know, this is my first game of the season. Last game I was at was the Birmingham game on December 23rd last season. So I'm not having to go through that awful routine. And that Birmingham game, I'd been very complacent about it. I sort of thought, oh, it's not that bad. Yeah, we'll get ourselves sorted out in the Championship. And then I remember being in the pub with Peter before the game, and him insisting on buying another pint at 5-3. And then we got in at like 25 past three. It was can we go back to the pub now? And like the just the flatness, lack of anger that Dave talked about, that was something that I was really struck by. The sort of just the lethargy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Are you struggling to find something to watch during lockdown? You've drained Netflix, rewatched all your old favourites, and now you need something new? Well, we're here to help. Join us for Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head in a fight to the death.
Release the Kraken.
Well, not death. We just decide which one is better.
When they do a long shot of the crowd in the ivory tower, it's different to the close-up. And if you look closely, you can see E.T., Mickey Mouse, Chewbacca, Ewoks, and C-3PO.
So when Wolfgang Petersen went to Spielberg, went, could you maybe re-edit my movie? Steven Spielberg went, yeah. Do you know what I'm probably going to cut out? E-T, mate.
I made that.
Find your new favourite movie or revisit an old classic with me, Alex Zane, Vicky Crompton and Chris Tilley. New episodes out every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
Does that happen because of where Sunderland have come from? In terms of, I'm not talking as in falling through the division so quickly, but almost the way we went out of the Premier League. So there's this weird sort of Premier League purgatory. Like Villa were there before, and then Sunderland, that sort of almost getting relegated season after season after season. Then it finally had to, I mean, you could argue that Newcastle are in that position now.
Well, we had a conversation in the pub beforehand where we said, like, what would you rather? Would you rather be battling against relegation from the Premier League every season or be in the playoffs in the Championship and get up and get relegated every now and then and be a yo-yo club? And everybody was like, oh, I'd much rather be in the Championship and go up and down. It's just, the Premier League is unremittingly dull unless you've got a squad that will allow you to compete.
I do wonder with that, that's what we grew up with. You know, when we were like in our late teens, we were a yo-yo club.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if my perspective would be different if I'd grown up being in the Premier League for a decade. I don't know. But
well, here's a perspective. So I've got two kids, taking them both to the game. Neither of them are here today. They don't like football. Now, part of the reason they don't like football is to do with them. Part of the reason they don't like football is because they've turned.
Because
that's just an added bonus for them. No, it's because they've turned up, you know, to a game week after week after week. It's just seen us get beat. And actually, it'd be really interesting to look at stats of how many younger people are watching Sunderland now compared to how many younger people when we grew up. When we were in the old third division and we were, you know, dodging around the lower leagues a little bit, but by God, at least we had some excitement in our lives.
We're also paying £2.50 to get in.
Well, I suppose it's not just the winning, although that's nice. No one likes to get beaten every week. But as you were saying, Dave, the feeling of community, the feeling of being part of it. I mean, you've started this supporters association, and of course, you've got history from your day job of mobilising supporters, and you know what you're doing in that direction. But to me, it seems extraordinary that Wembley Army has already got 7,500 members from a standing start at the start of this season. I mean, that tells us that the fans are ready for something, ready for some sort of engagement, for some sort of mobilisation, right?
I think that's right. I think the timing of setting up the Red and White Army ended up being crucial. Wasn't always sort of designed that way, but we came into being towards what ended up being towards the end of the previous regime, and we pushed a little hard on various things about trying to push the owner to sell and sell at a reasonable price and that sort of thing, and that engaged a lot of fans early on. But since the new regime have come in, they've recognised the importance of a supporters group like ours. In fact, I believe they were involved in setting up similar supporter groups at Oxford. So they sort of get it. And one of the first things we've done with them is produce a survey to get fans' views on the match day experience. And we got sort of 9,000 or 10,000 fans completed a fairly lengthy survey. But what happens is the club says, we're listening to this, we're listening to fans. And then you have the supporters saying, we can tell this is not your normal survey. It's written by fans and it gets a lot of buy-in. And that's been sort of that's a little sort of window into what it's been like generally. There's just been that genuine engagement, and from my day job point of view with the Football Supporters Federation, I'm not aware of anything quite like it where there's that such transparency. Some fans might argue too much transparency about how the club is being run, like the governance, the finance, right down to things like naming of the stands and things like that. Just really refreshing and unusual. I mean, it was only this week the club came out and sort of were one of the leaders on the charge for having legalising drinking in the stadium, the pitch side.
Yeah.
So they're really at the sort of feel like they're at the forefront. They've got a lot of energy at the minute, and they're wanting to blaze a trail, I think, with fans generally, as well as at Sunderland.
And I suppose there's been a lot of talk of it recently, hasn't there, with Croatia versus England, and I think how jarring people found that as a spectacle. The fact that it just looked like a kickabout between elite players, yeah, really, yeah, didn't it? And I think when I've talked to a few people about this recently, a few players have come to our board and said the atmosphere in England is not what people say. And you know, so much part of the television spectacle, for want of a better phrase, is actually the fans getting into it. Because if the fans aren't into it,
yeah,
it's difficult to sell. And you know, the difference between the Stadium of Light, when even what, 2/3 full today, is, you know, decent noise, and then when it's completely empty and, as Jennifer was saying, it's just total apathy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's night and day, isn't it?
Well, last season it was just, it wasn't even like going to the football. It was, I mean, they'd closed the fan zone down. So you sort of, the journey with my son to the match was walking over the Weymouth Bridge with everybody just looking glum, not looking forward to the game. You walk through a desolate fan zone on a post-apocalyptic looking stadium. It's what it felt like. And you go in and you just wait for the first goal to go in against you and sort of work out what time you were going to leave. I remember one fan last season saying that he's 2/3 of the way through, his highlight had been when one of the burger stands had made too many burgers and had to reduce them down to a quid. That was the pinnacle of last season.
You've got to remember as well just how bleak it was, that I think I'm right in saying the Sunderland were ahead, this is not even talking about winning, we were ahead in four games last year at home.
No, that's not great.
And I say it was a total of kind of, I don't know, 100 minutes over the whole year where Sunderland were actually ahead at home.
Well, we didn't win for almost a full year.
Just under a full year
as well.
At home,
which is just unbelievable. And even before that, we didn't win that much. So it was, God, I'm depressing myself now. We've just won.
Struck me, as well as the fact that when White Army's getting off the ground, is the fact that you were helping with the food bank in the town earlier. The fact that it's not just creating engagement with the club and the fans, but with the community. Has that always been the case, even through the league years, that there's been that relationship between the club and the community, or is that something that fell off a bit as well?
I think one of the front runners, if not the front runner, with the Foundation of Light, which was created by Bob Murray. But I'm not so sure that the connection in recent years has been that strong between the club and the foundation.
Is that because of the absentee owner?
I think largely due to that, yeah, and the fact that he was just had us on a drip effectively, so there was not really anybody working for the club as such. They were just happy to accept him keeping the club afloat, so there was not really any innovation or graft or work around the club there. So in terms of the Red and White Army and the Sunderland food banks, that's something that came about as we grew as a central entity in Sunderland, from Sunderland supporters' point of view, so a natural conduit to do stuff in the community. But also inspiration from little pockets of activity around the country, so particularly on Merseyside, and actually just up the road in Newcastle as well, there's been some amazing initiatives where supporters have partnered with the local food banks, and it's as much about the awareness that football can bring, and obviously the sheer numbers, and the fact that the community is pretty much all congregating sort of once a fortnight.
Yeah,
there's a practical thing there as well, where you actually just bring a few tins of food and donate. So we had our second collection today. Unfortunately, the fan zone was where we were located. It was closed due to the weather. So it put a little bit of dent in terms of the traffic that was hovering around the collection, but still it's humbling to see supporters who, you know, you've never met trudging up the roads with two carrier bags full of food. We did the first collection against Fleetwood, and I heard stories of sort of middle-aged blokes who's probably never did the big shop in their lives, standing in the pubs at the bar with two carrier bags, totally sort of underestimating how far the walk is to the ground. And but it's I mean, the first collection was, I think, a ton of food was collected, a van full. The under-18s and under-23 academy sides came and were rattling the buckets and really took to it. Again, the club said that the reason that they wanted to partner it, apart from the, you know, the fact that it would help in the community, is they wanted their young players, their stars of the future, not to be grown up in a bubble of football, and wanting to understand what the community around them is facing. And they were really keen to sort of use it as educational as well as helping the local community as well. So it's been fantastic, and we did it again today, and again people turned up and donated massive amounts of food and cash. I think it's something we're going to continue. It's worked really well.
And I guess it's another thing that helps you feel close to the club and as if you've got the club back, right?
Yeah, it's another sort of bridge between what has been seen as a bit of almost like an untouchable thing, really, the club, when it, you know, when they're employing people on 30, 40, 50,000 pounds a year, and it just feels so distant from the reality. And, you know, again, if you're winning, it papers over those cracks. But I think there's been a real education over the last few seasons of what it means to be a football fan for Sunderland fans, and it's not just about what's on the pitch, it's about everything else, yeah.
So you were saying it's a long time since you last came. How different was
I want to make clear, it's because I work at weekends. it's not that I kind of
not
like...
Not fair weatherness.
Well, I mean, no, it's not fair weatherness. I don't live in Sunderland. I have to work at weekends. I was able to arrange it so I could come today.
How different was this to the last couple of Sunderland home games?
Well, OK, the one I came to before the Birmingham game, we beat Everton 3-0. Is that true? Maybe that's not true. But anyway, compared to the Birmingham game, it was light and day. You know, it was night and day even. Yeah, even though I guess in terms of numbers, it was only 4,000 or 5,000 more than that Birmingham game. I mean, it was not a great atmosphere. It was still... 16,000 empty seats, which is a problem, but it's something we're always going to have in that stadium. But it was, the whole thing was so much more engaged, so much more relaxed, so much happier. It was enjoyable, which the Birmingham game just wasn't, and partly that's because we won, but it was enjoyable before we scored the first goal as well. So yeah, very, very different. But actually, sorry, far more important than that is what Dave's just been talking about. I was on an American podcast on Friday, and they asked me about the idea of La Liga playing games in the US. What Dave is talking about in terms of community is precisely why that is a terrible idea. That a football club is way more than an entity to win games and to make money. It's an entity that has a profound function in its community, and we should be very proud that our clubs still do that. And I think it's very dangerous if you start to attack that.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man.
tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.